Thanks, Graham. I'm not sure I'm going to answer whose fault it is. But talking about managing credit risk in a portfolio, and in particular, avoiding credit disasters, which I see as an entirely different thing from avoiding credit risk. As you'll see as we go through, if you're taking on credit risk, you should expect to experience failures. It's what impact that failure has on the portfolio that's the most important one. Having said that, when I talk to advisors about how they avoid credit disasters, typically it comes into one of five categories. They get expert help. In other words, the rating agencies, the research houses, they look at the analysis, and depending on what the particular rating is, they'll take that as the basis of their decision. And so if something's got a AA rating, it is safe and okay to put lots of money in. A second category is people say, look, we don't really trust the research houses that much. And so what we do is do our own analysis on securities or funds or mortgage funds or whatever. And we really want to get to understand the management. We really want to understand what the risks are involved. And once we've made that we've got to that stage, we'll only invest in things we really know and understand. And that way we're going to avoid the risks. The third one is, well, we're going to be pretty quick on our feet. Normally you can see these things coming. If something's being downgraded from, say, BBB to BB, you get out then before it goes broke, because there's normally a long time lapse before something actually goes out the back door. We're going to be quick. You don't hear so much of that, but you hear a certain amount of it. Fourth camp is, we just don't take risks. We only buy government bonds, and that's the way we avoid the whole thing. And the fifth one, which is the one I suggest is a better idea, is actually managing your risks. Take the risk, manage it. We'll see what that means in a moment. Firstly, getting expert help. Some of you will have seen this slide before. It's only up to 2004, but you get the message. What they've done here, this is S&P, they've gone and looked at all the securities that were originally rated, when they were issued, were rated AA. And they said 10 years later, how many of them have failed? And it turns out it's 1% on average. The worst period in that 1970-2004, the worst 10-year period, about 2.5% of them failed. About, what's that, 1 in 40. Securities originally AA, about 1 in 50 fall over normally. BBB, about 1 in 18. BB, it's almost 1 in 5. Single B, almost 1 in 3. Now, I'm guessing, if you haven't seen those numbers before, that doesn't seem very realistic to you. Because until recently, we've really seen very few credit failures in this country. Not unless you've got very, very long memories. Most of you have really only been investing in credit type or in investments with a reasonable amount of credit risk, probably for 5 or 6 years. And it has been probably the most benign period in history for credit failure. We're now starting to see what credit failure looks like, and soon I suspect we'll all come to understand that this is what you should expect. Now, the point of this one is twofold. One, if you're buying securities just because they're rated AA or single A does not mean they're going to fail. So you cannot rely on the experts just because they say it is safe, that it will in fact be safe. What they're really saying is if we put an A rating on something, we think there's about a 1 in 50 chance it'll fall over in the next 10 years. It's like the weather forecasters. If they're saying consistently we think there's a 1 in 10 chance of rain, every 10 days when you go out, it's going to rain on you. Do they get it wrong? Not really. What you've got to use these things is as support, but not as a crutch that says just because it's got a good rating, it will not fall over. Similarly with managed funds, just because they get a good rating doesn't mean it's not going to fall over. You know, rating funds is really, really hard. The fund managers are really, really good at telling stories. They are utterly convincing, partly because most of them actually believe it themselves. You know, I don't think anyone at Basis Capital thought there was a realistic risk that what they're going through now could actually happen. So if you talk to them, they're not going to tell you about it, which makes it really hard to unravel this stuff. So the point of that one is, yes, get the expert help, but do not rely on it. Use it as an aid rather than an absolute. The next one is only buy issues you really understand. Now, I'm assuming you're going to get into an issue that's perhaps rated about double B or something like that, which has got, let's say, a 1 in 20 chance or 20% chance of failure. This is getting more down to, probably around double B in a bad market time period. What I've said, looked at here is if you own just one security, how likely is it that you will ever experience a failure? And this is over a 10-year period. And in fact, if you only own one security, the chance of getting no failures is 80%. And the more securities you hold, the higher the chance you're going to get a failure. So on first level, we say, well, maybe it's a pretty good idea to only invest in the things we really understand and just hold four or five securities. But I think you're going to be guessing that this is not the case. The second piece is the probability that if you get a failure, you'll lose more than 50%, 15% of your capital. If you hold one issue, is 20%. It actually goes up a bit for a while. But the compensating is the far column is, if you get a failure, you're going to lose a lot of money. And as you get more and more spread, the chances of experiencing failure go higher and higher. The chances that you'll lose more than 15% of your capital start to decline a little bit. And the likely loss starts to stabilise. Now, 14%, that's over a 10-year period. So it works out as 1.4% per annum. If you're going out and buying credit risk securities that are giving you a 3% premium over bonds, you're still well ahead, even with those failure rates. But when you look at that, it really says that if you're buying 1, 2, 3, 5, even 10 different securities, you're playing chicken with the markets. If the best research from the rating houses and the researchers can't really identify when these things are going to fall over, your chances of doing it are pretty small. And what that really means is you're playing chicken. If you only hold a few securities, you're really likely everyone will sail through, you never have a loss and everything's fantastic. But when you do have a loss, it's devastating. For me, it's playing chicken, it's rolling the dice, it's poor risk management. So I'd really caution against that. And when you see, to really get the proper diversification, you need 50, 100 issues, it really means you're really talking about the funds here, unless you've got some very, very big clients. The next one is, it's all right, we're going to be quick on our feet. And there's a couple little messages in these charts. This is a crowd out of the States called Market, and they, effectively here, what they're doing is running, they give a chart of the price of asset-backed securities. These are the non-prime, non-prime loans. And these ones, when they were originally launched, which was back in the first, in January 07, they were this tranche of securities was rated triple B. So this is, again, it's two pieces here. Can you rely that because it's triple B, it's investment grade, it'll be fine? Well, we find 6 months later, something that was issued at a dollar is now down to 35 cents. And that was triple B. And I don't think they've had a lot of failures here yet. This is the mark to market. The market is anticipating problems. It's going to get there before you are. This one is somewhat more scary. This is the triple A-rated portion of the non-prime loans. And for a long, long time, everyone said, this is fine, it's not going to touch this. And then in the space of a couple of weeks, we've gone from a dollar to 87 cents. Triple A-rated. So are you going to be able to get out in front of the markets? I don't think so. By the time you work out this problem, the market will be there first. So I don't think being quick on your feet is an answer. Next one is, let's not take any risks. What I've done here is the first column is government bonds. You get a yield at the moment, say, around about 6. You don't get any yield pickup for taking on extra risk because it's all versus government bonds. So you go on to the next one, triple B securities. With the markets moving, this may not be quite up to date, but it's close. You're getting about 1.5% better than government bonds. When you take out the fact that you'll get failures on triple Bs, but when they fail, sometimes it's as benign as just missing a single interest payment. Other times you lose all your money. On average, you get some money back. So on that basis, you should lose something. It's about 0.5% a year, which means out of triple Bs at these sort of premiums, you should be getting about a 7% return. That's a good deal. The high yields, the yield pickup at the moment, about 4.5%. With all the failures, if they work out on average, you should lose a couple percent out of there, and you get 8.3. The third column is just averaging the two. If you have a portfolio that's kind of like half triple B, half high yield. It's what I describe as tier two fixed interest. You should be getting about 7.5 or seven, a little bit above that, which is a whole lot better than bonds, even after you had some credit failures. This all assumes you've got really broadly diversified portfolios. You're capturing the whole market. Of course, if you're buying a triple B and you get a credit failure and you only own one of them, how much do you lose? Potentially 100%. The only way you get this relatively benign effect of defaults is by owning a lot of things. But as soon as you own a lot of things, you can expect you really will see it. So if you're in the attitude saying we're just not going to take any risk, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but you're potentially leaving a lot of money on the table. Taking credit risk is a good idea. It depends on how you manage it. Which is really the thing I would suggest to you is this is a simple process for managing the risks. Firstly, decide how much pain you can accept for any one investment. Secondly, you do a back-of-the-envelope credit assessment. Thirdly, you do a worst-case analysis and then determine what your exposure is to any one issue. I'll take you through what I mean by here. You know, one of the things where I would be very critical of what most of the research houses have done recently is when you look at their reports, they go, risks. There's a section, there's this long laundry list. Oh, we could have liquidity. You know, you've seen them. They never actually tell you what could go wrong. They could tell you all the things that could cause it. Really, you'd really like just a summary at the top that gives you two things. How likely is it that it'll going to hit the fan? And if it happens, what would that mean to me? Is that really what you need? And you don't need all the other stuff. It's kind of nice to have. But if you just had that simple thing at the start, I think that would be very useful. So what I'm going to do is describe a what I call a quick and dirty way of doing it. This is by no means perfect. But if no one else is going to step up the plate and do it for you, and they should, but if they don't, you're going to have to do it yourself. So here's a process to help you manage credit risk. Firstly, decide how much pain you can stand from any one investment. So you look at your client and say, if this thing goes horribly wrong, how much am I prepared to let it hurt my overall portfolio? When I talk to planners about this, the normal answer comes back to be 1 or 2%. You know, if you had had an exposure to basis in all of your client portfolios and the net loss was 1 or 2%, my guess is they really wouldn't be that concerned about it. One of the problems with credit failures is everyone looks like a dill afterwards. You know, when the market goes down, look, how we couldn't have known. But credit looks, well, how could you meant to be the expert? You should have known. And there's always a bad smell to it. You know, someone's either been stupid, often criminal. And everyone's like, well, why didn't you know? You've got to somehow put that behind you and just accept that this will happen. And the reasons it happens often aren't good, but you're not to know that ahead of time. So assume you're going to get credit failures, but then say, I will want to limit my failure to a certain amount for any one portfolio. And my guess is the number is 1% to 2%. I'll run on the basis it's 2% for the rest of this piece. Then do a back-of-the-envelope credit assessment. Firstly, ask the question, what sort of interest rate do you get on triple B securities? What kind of interest rate do I get on junk bonds? If you know that, and let's say the numbers we were running with before, about 1.5% on triple B, about 4% on junk bonds, or 4.5%. Then you go to the fund you're looking at or the individual security you got or if it's some sort of mortgage vehicle, what is the interest rate on the underlying securities compared to the government bond rate? Now, often, certainly I have some clients in New Zealand and quite often they tell me things like, oh, we put money with this finance company but we think it's fine even though they're paying 3% above the government bond rate because we really know the people. It's okay. We've got 100 years history. They've never had a problem. We understand how it all works. This is sound. For mine, if you've got someone who's paying 3% above bonds to raise money, they're either stupid or the risk they're taking is far higher than they know. Because look, you know, if you've got a decent bunch of securities, you can go to the market, package them up, and if they're really triple B rated, until recently, you could sell them off quite easily at 1% above bonds. Why would you be paying retail investors 3% above bonds unless, one, their assets really are a whole lot riskier than everyone thinks, or you're stupid? Maybe you're too small to do it, but geez, there's a lot of risk to be investing with small outfits too. So the idea is try and find enough to fund, ask the question, of the things you invest in, what is the interest rate on the underlying securities? Now, I don't know the answer, but for basis, for example, my guess is, what were they probably earning a couple, 2-3% above? Let's assume they're earning, what were they paying? 7 or 8% above bonds as their sort of running rate? And they were geared up about 3 or 4 times? Well, let's say they were paying 2% above. If they're paying 2% above, they're kind of like a double B security. And as we saw before, in a worst case scenario, if you have a diversified set of double B securities, you could lose 30-40% of your money. Well, then you gear that 3 or 4 times. It's basis capital. So look, let's do a couple of case studies. Firstly, let's assume bonds are giving you 1.3% above triple B and junk bonds about 4. And you're buying into a single issue. Maybe it's a note that's listed on the share market. And it's paying 1.4% above bonds. So you'd kind of say this thing on this basis is probably slightly lower risk than triple B. Or sorry, slightly higher risk than triple B. And it's a single issuer. So there's no diversity here. And let's say there's no gearing in this case. Second case, we're buying something which has got bonds plus 2.4 as the underlying running rate. That means this really is lower risk than double B. So if things really go bad, there's going to be quite a lot of failure. It's well diversified by issuer, and there's no gearing. And the third one, it's say you're getting bonds plus 1.3. So you're buying triple B, but it's a single issuer. It's a single issuer, make this diversified fund. I think I've got the wrong thing here, but never mind. And you've got 50% gearing. Okay, let's have a look and see what you've got. Firstly, the first one, if it's lower than triple B, let's assume you're going to get failure rates of... I've got the next slide. Yeah, if you've got a single issuer with triple B or less, if it fails, you potentially lose 100%. That's not like what you expect to happen, but if everything goes wrong, that's what you probably lose or could lose. A well-diversified fund which has got triple B securities in it, on average, if in a worst-case scenario, you might lose 10%. Double B, on average, 30%. Single B, 50%. And then gearing just ratchets up to all your losses. So let's go back to our case. First case study, we're saying it's the triple B, single issuer, maximum loss 100%. It's really simple. Once you've decided that, and you've decided the most I'll lose on any one investment is 2%, I cannot put more than 2% into that asset. Like, this is not rocket science. On that basis, you'd never lose more than 2% for your clients. Everything's fine. The second one, double B, well diversified. You say, well, we could lose 30%. There's no gearing. On this case, you would put in 2% divided by 0.3, or divided by 30%, which gives you 6.6% exposure as your maximum. And on that basis, you think it's highly unlikely you'll ever lose more than 2%. Third case, you've got a diversified fund, triple B, well geared. You said your maximum loss is 10%, but it's geared 4 times. Well, I could lose 40% on this one. So how much do I put in? The maximum of 5%. Does that all kind of make sense? So, point of all that. If you want to avoid credit disasters, I think the things you've got to understand is, one, the experts aren't foolproof. They do a good job, but they're giving you probabilities, not certainties. Secondly, really strongly recommend against rolling the dice, just sticking with a few things you feel that you understand. To the extent that you've done that in the past and haven't been hurt, I would say it's because you've been lucky rather than skillful, and you'll probably find that out over time. If you're relying on getting out first, don't. The markets will get there before you. I think credit risk is worth taking. The returns are there, properly managed, but that's the bottom line. They're risks that must be managed. So that's really a quick and dirty approach to credit risk. This is not a perfect approach. It's not foolproof. But until someone steps up to the plate and says, here is an asset, this is what we think is the worst case scenario for it in a way that's useful, I'm afraid you're going to have to do it yourself. This is one useful way of going about it. Thank you.
Come on.